Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Agnes, good afternoon.
Hello, Joseph. How are you?
How are you? Do you think you made a mistake?
I don't know, Joe. It's not unusual. The doctor said that my husband should be downsizing at his age.
And what happened?
But I just feel that it's very hard to catch a shark with a worm, Joe, you know.
Yeah, and what happened? You downsized and then you regretted it.
Well, I regret it now. I mean, obviously, I regret it now. I mean, I'm downsizing to a condominium. A condominium.
Yeah.
That's exactly right, Joe.
And there's cream. Yes. There's cream available for that.
Joe. How are you, Joe?
How are you, Brendan O'Carley, you goose. You goose.
Well, listen, I couldn't let the moment go, boy. I mean, it's been an amazing, amazing run for anybody on radio, but particularly for you, because you're so boring that it's hard to believe that people listened in 5 days
a
week.
I know. And I remember a fella telling me up in the Phoenix Park. When I started here, I did a documentary, Brent, on the Phoenix Park. And he was a psychic. He was a psychic. Noel was his name. And he worked for the in Arboriculturist. And he said to me at the end of the interview, he said, you know, I have a funny feeling you're going to be a household name someday. Of course, I was chuffed, Agnes. Well, and he said, if you change your name to Domestos, he says. So I didn't. So here we are, 37 years later. 37 years.
Well, I remember the first time I saw you, I think it was on the news, heading up a student's march.
Yeah.
And you were speaking at that, and I remember looking at you and thinking, he's going to go nowhere. And here I am, years later, being proved right.
Where are you? How come? I was watching an episode last night about... first of all, June Rogers is in it, which she's a brilliant addition to it. She really is.
Oh, she's fantastic, Joe. She's been a brilliant addition to it, and she's given it an injection of life.
Yeah, and badly in the case. Well, she wouldn't give you the kiss of life. She wouldn't go next or near you. But it was who was last night? Paddy Houlihan. See, I only know their real names. And Fiona were renewing their marriage vows. When did you make that one?
Oh yes. We made that one 3 years ago.
Okay.
3 years ago, that would have been on one of the Christmas specials.
And it hasn't, you know something...
Listen, I'm not here to talk...
It hasn't aged. It hasn't aged, Brendan.
You, Joe.
Sorry, yeah.
You haven't aged.
No, I'm saying the episode you made 3 years ago, it hasn't aged. It still isn't funny.
Joe, say nothing. I'm still getting away with it.
Where are you? Where are you anyway? Brendan O'Carroll, where are you?
Florida. I'm in the sunshine of Florida. I mean, actually, it's too hot here. It's 105 degrees here at the moment, so it's very, very hot.
And the last time I was talking to June Rogers there, and I'm seeing June tomorrow, hopefully. She said you were filming, what, 4 or 5 weeks ago. What were you making in Scotland?
A new miniseries of Mrs. Brown. For I think they're running that in the fall, and it was really, really good. June was fantastic because I don't know if you're aware, but she hadn't been well.
I knew that, of course.
On the run up to this,
yeah.
And I asked her at the time. I said, June, I can certainly write you out of it. You know, if you're not feeling up to it, she said, absolutely not. She said, keep me working. That's what I want to do.
Absolutely.
And she just put in a sterling performance, as they all do. I mean, it's amazing to see it happen, as you did. I mean, you were in an episode.
Yeah.
To see it happen from the rehearsal room right up to the shooting, it's incredible to see the change and how polished it gets, etc. And it's good fun. It's great fun.
No, it's just I'm so thrilled to see June because you wrote her in as Birdie, and she's been in what about 10 or 12 episodes at this stage.
And now a permanent fixture, Joe.
Yeah, because remember, in the business, June Rogers has been around. a long time, and she's from Tops of the Towns. Remember the player Wills, Tops of the Towns? That's how she.
That's the first time I saw. The first time I saw her was in the Blair Wills Theatre,
and she was
in Tops of the Towns. I actually went to see a friend of mine who was working in a factory, and he was performing on the night, and she came out, and I swear to God, she brought the house down, and continues to do. I never really understood why RTE or somebody didn't. Build a whole show around her because she's just got funny bones. She just can't help being funny.
And she's one of the nicest people. As I keep saying about June when we used to do Funny Friday, like she's low maintenance. She comes in, she does it, she does five costume changes. More often than not, we're in hotels, so there isn't dedicated dressing rooms behind the stage or whatever in the ballroom. Yeah. And she's just been one of the. And then, you see, she had the Christmas show. All those Christmas shows look like they're gone at this stage after COVID. So that was her. She worked her heart out for 6 months on that Christmas show. That went. The Red Cow was now gone, as you know, as a venue. And I was just, and then she had very, very serious health issues, as we all know. And she battled herself and Peter. And she came through with the help of the wonderful, wonderful team in Beaumont. And now she's in Mrs. Brown's Pies. So. There's nothing to stop her, and it's just great.
And one of the things about her is that she's so low maintenance that actually you forget she's there.
Yeah.
You know, you not until she has a line or whatever, and she speaks, and you go, oh God, that's right, June is here. She's so low maintenance. She comes over to Scotland. She checks into her apartment, turns up at every rehearsal. Yeah. She's absolutely no trouble whatsoever, and you can't say that about everybody. I can tell you that, include some of my family in that as well.
Oh, I can imagine. But show business, and I always say, people say to me about Gay Bourne, what was Gay? Was he a politician? Was he a social act? Gay loved showbiz. Gay was into. He loved showbiz people. He loved being around them. He loved telling stories. But show business is a fickle business. It is a fickle business, as you well know.
It is, Joe. And I remember one stage I was out playing golf with Jenny, and we stood up on one of the tee boxes, and it just dawned on me. And I turned around to her and I said, "Jenny, it's only dawned on me now. We work in a horrible business sometimes. It can be really, really hard, Joe. It can be really horrible to people. Without coming back to June all the time." Again, I can't understand why June Rogers isn't a star in Hollywood. She was she's just so good.
She was brilliant
and
in
then
the
again,
movie.
Having said,
in your movie,
she was
brilliant.
Superb, she was. Yes. And she was in both. She was in the one with Angelica Houston as well. And there was times when we were shooting. That she played Winnie the Mackerel.
Okay.
Oh no, she didn't. She played Noemore to Philomena. There was times when we were shooting that one with Angelica Houston that we had to stop the shoot because we just kept laughing.
Yeah.
June would just give you a look and straight away you were gone.
Yeah.
But listen, I don't want to talk about June, I want to talk about you. I want to talk about your fondest memories, and I don't want to impinge on tomorrow's show, but your fondest memory, particularly of the Funny Fridays, which I absolutely
loved.
And Joe, again, gave me a good kick in the bum for my career, and I really appreciated it. But what was your fondest memory?
I'm just talking about
Funny
Friday. I remember we were down doing a Funny Friday in the Royal in Castlebar. Okay, and Siobhan Hock was producing. Siobhan is still with us, thankfully, and in the organisation. And Siobhan said, "There's a fella after coming up to me, and he's doing impersonations. I think we'll give him a go." And you know, there and then, and that was Frank Ford. That was Frank Ford who walked out of the audience onto the stage. He did Michael D. He did Patrick Flynn. He did Daniel O'Donnell. He's just an absolute, and I just remember saying, where else would you get it where someone walks up out of an audience and suddenly, I'm sure he had a following in I say mainly
Castlebar,
many creditors, I say, were following him around. But he had a following. He had another favourite moment to come, of course, was reuniting. And on the positive front, I know we through the callers, We did stuff on cystic fibrosis and scams and the various drugs and women, the menopause, and then women who were being victimized because they had mastectomies. Over stupid, petty little cutbacks. But I remember reuniting. We were here, sitting here one day on radio, obviously, and 10 to 3, we got this call, and her first name was Surjit, and she was ringing from a taxi, would you believe, in Dublin Airport, and she came on, and she was on her way out to Dublin Airport in a taxi. She was crying in the back. The taxi driver said to her, what's happened? I'm quoting, what's happened, love? She says, every bank holiday in the UK, it wasn't here that day, I come over and I walk around Dublin looking for my sister, who I haven't seen in 43 years. And the only clue we ever had when she ran away at 15 was that she had came to Dublin. Okay. She came, as the taxi driver said, ring Liveline. She was on Liveline, but ten minutes to three, I remember really, and then we were very conscious of names and confidentiality. So I just said to her, don't give out her name, but does she have a nickname? Did you just have a little pet name? You know, the wee kid. And she gave out her pet name. And it so happens that a bus driver on Bus Éireann had Liveline on the bus. He had a blasting through the bus. I'm sure the passengers were looking for the money back. But anyway, there was someone sitting on that bus going to Mullingar, and she recognised the nickname, and she said, "That's our Vicky, that's Vicky," and she rang Vicky and said, "Vicky, will you listen to Liveline? There's somebody. Isn't your pet name whatever? It was an unusual one." She said, "They're looking for you." And by the end of that week. Within 48 hours, the two of them were reunited after 43 years. Okay? Surjit came back from Birmingham. They met each other. But one of the most bizarre episodes, obviously it happened on Liveline, was then about a week later, they were brought over for the Late Late Show. Okay?
Right.
And the two of them were on the Late Late Show. After the Late Late Show, you're brought into hostility and you're offered a drink. And I said to Surjit, would you like a drink? She said, yeah, I want the G&T. Right. Now, only one ice cube and no lemon, lime. If you don't have lime, I don't want lemon. Okay. So I go and get her that drink. Vicky, her sister, who they hadn't seen for 43 years, I said, Vicky, would you like a drink? She said, yeah. Gin and tonic. One ice cube. Do not put lemon in it under any circumstances. I only want lime. So there's sisterhood for you. 43 years apart. But it's
the
lovely
story. Must give you goose pimples. Must give you a great sense of you know, having done something really, really important in some individual's life. That's incredible, Joe.
Yeah, and it's true. It's true. The community in Ireland, and I think we're hanging on to it by our fingernails, but I think we still have a community in Ireland. We still have one or two, three, four programmes that are part of a national conversation. I know it's difficult. I know local radio is, and we're blessed. Great national radio stations. I include News Talk, Today FM, Lyric. I include all the local stations. They're all really genuine, really compassionate. A great local newspapers. But we still have a sense of community. So when we were looking for Tom DeCon back years and years ago, and someone came on, he used to do guest houses, run away without paying, and I remember the first call is Park 8 Street, and he was a very very different looking man, Tom DeCon, we called him. And then we get a phone call from Galway. He was with me 4 days ago. Then Donegal. We were following him around the country, And that conversation, that type of conversation where you have Donegal and you have Drogheda and Dunmanway and Darndale in the one conversation is just great. So that's a gift. Privilege.
Well, it just shows us that we live in a village.
We live in a village, village.
It's a big village, but we do live in a village. And you know what? They're running a program over here on CNN at the moment about Live Aid.
Okay.
The creation of it and et cetera. And it always struck me that of all the people that donated to Live Aid from different countries, that per capita, Ireland was the highest donors.
Still are in many ways. Yeah.
Yeah, and but it never ever ceases to amaze me how a little country like ours can make such an impact on a world stage. But if you take that down to its minutiae, the impact that you've had, it became, I don't know how many times I was in shops where somebody wasn't getting the service they wanted and they went, I'm going to ring Joe Duffy. Ring Joe Duffy now. You're in trouble.
Well, you know what happened to me, but really I'd never lose. I was in a shop once. Okay, and I'm queuing up to pay, and I could see this couple, husband and wife, about five back from me, and she's nudging him, and she's saying, "Go on, I'll tell you, I think it is him." And between jigs and reels, I turned around, and he says to me, "You don't mind me, my wife Mary thinks you're Joe Duffy, right?" And I said, "But that's my name." No, she says she thinks you're the Joe Duffy, and I could hear my mother in my ear. With the wood, if I said I'm D. Joe Duffy, it'd be the wooden spoon up the stairs. If you last the run of yourself, I said, "Well, yeah." He says, "Me go on. You are D. Joe Duffy." I said, "I am." And he, not a word of a lie, Bran. He turned to his wife, shouts down the queue, "Mary, I told you, he's the Joe Duffy that owns all the garages." So don't lose a run of yourself.
Oh God.
And what was the other great story, Brand, not losing, was Roddy Doyle told it recently, and it's happened to me a few times. You're walking up and someone does a second take on you and they turn around, you come back. Are you Joe Duffy? And yeah. And then they say, So what?
Well, I was on a book tour in Canada and America, and I was doing an interview in Toronto, and it was an afternoon program when the guy was a real fast talker and giving traffic updates and weather updates at the same time, and he was buzzing.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there waiting to be interviewed, and eventually he comes with me in the studio, Brendan O'Carroll. He's an Irish author. And Brendan, can I ask you, which did you write first? Was it the van? Or I went, what? And he said, which one did you write first? What was your first book? And I went, I didn't write those. And he went, what? I said, I didn't write those. Roddy Doyle wrote those. And he said, oh. So, brilliant. Who are you? Shortest interview we ever did. Brendan O'Carroll, I wrote that book you have in front of you there called The Mummy. And he went, oh, okay. Join us after the break and we'll be talking about traffic and weather. And that was it. It was the end of the interview.
I don't know whether you were listening yesterday, but it's small world. We were talking about the Nyack fire in 1972 down in Parnell Street, Kings Inn Street. Your father-in-law, Jenny's father, and you know Jenny's family have a great tradition in the fire brigade. Before he passed, Jenny's father told me he was one of the first firemen. He was in Buckingham Street. He was one of the first firefighters to arrive, because Buckingham Street is only 3 minutes. And he described the heat to me within 3 minutes of them getting the call they were there of the inferno. But that was Jenny's dad. So it's a small world. I wouldn't like to wallpaper it, but it's a small world.
I'll tell you how small it is. When I was 11 years of age, year after my dad died, and the big thing at the time was the Johnny 7 rifle. They call it OMA, the one-man army.
Okay.
And it did everything. This Johnny 7 thing did everything. It shot grenades, it shot darts, it did everything. And I so wanted one for Christmas. Everybody wanted one for Christmas. So Christmas morning came. The army mates came down. There was a Johnny 7 there for them. I came down the stairs to see what Santa left me, and he left me a gun and two holsters.
Okay.
And I went, oh, okay, I'm not getting a Johnny 7. So on the way back to school after the Christmas break, I'm walking up towards St. Peter's Church, because I was in St. Gabriel's in Ockham Street. I'm walking up towards St. Peter's Church to get my second bus. And there's a couple of fire brigades there, and there's all smoke, etc. Yeah. And I walked down the lane, and there was a factory after being burnt.
Yeah.
But there to the right was a pallet load of Johnny Sevens. The top of them were burnt. The top ones were burnt.
Okay.
But there wasn't. So I went, oh, hello. So I started inching my way over to it. And the fireman came over and gave me a nudge and said, go on, help yourself.
Good lad.
So I went over and I grabbed one off the bottom and it was perfect. And I was delighted with myself. And I'm coming away and he says to me, you can take a few if you want. I said, no, I just want the one. And off he goes. No school. I went straight home and I had me Johnny Seven all day. Fast forward 30 years, 35 years. We're sitting in Florida having a cup of tea with Jenny's dad. And we're talking about how kids expect so much for Christmas nowadays and how it's changed so much. And Michael said, I remember there was a fire, I think it was in Fisborough.
Right.
And this kid came down and he went over and I said, take it, help yourself. And he took one, and that's all he took, just the one. And I was gobsmacked for a second. I said, Michael, that was me.
Yeah.
And he went, back off. I said, no, Michael, seriously, that was me. I remember it so well. And he went, God almighty, that's amazing. So I just thought, you know what? I think he gave me that rifle and then thought to himself, now you're going to have to pay for that, son, in 30 years later.
Marry my daughter.
But I mean, again, it comes back to the village that we live in, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard. It's so hard to be anonymous in Ireland. It really is. Not that you want to be, but it's so hard to be anonymous. It's just, I hope we never lose that worrying about your neighbour. Regardless of who your neighbour is, just worrying about them, even if they've annoyed you. But you wouldn't want anything bad to happen to them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, Brendan, I don't know whether you heard your namesake, Brendan Gleeson, the fantastic actor and family of actors, and his wife, Mary. And I was the first, that's my probably my only claim to fame. I used to go to St. Francis Xavier Hall, which is now gone, and I went to see Home. It was written, wasn't written by Roddy, but that the group of them were brilliant. And Brendan Gleeson was in it, and he was absolutely brilliant. And he was a teacher. And I tried to persuade him to go on and be interviewed. And he was very nervous, but he did do his first interview with Gay. That's my little claim to fame. Now, yesterday, Brendan was on. You know, he does incredible work for St. Francis Hospice.
Yes, absolutely. Well, there's
more than one place now. And Brendan was saying, now I didn't hear the full interview, but I knew exactly, he was trying to, he was much more articulate than me. He was talking about the world we live in, even the language we're using, the atmosphere that's around the place, Ukraine, Gaza, you know, everything, Iran, just the belligerence, even people being deeply upset watching the news, watching the pictures from Gaza and other places. And Brendan was saying,
and the hate speech that's out there.
Yeah. The hate speech. And we had it again on Friday on the programme, two young men who were gay being abused on the streets of Dublin. 40, you know, just horrific. Yeah, but Brendan was saying we need, that's why, I think that's why one of the ways people can help is by, there's lots of charities working in the Middle East and to try and give, and because we feel so powerless in the world we live in. But anyway, you bring joy. Anyone that brings joy into anyone's life and a bit of fun and a bit of hope. And you know your little... thought for the day, or reflections at the end of Mrs. Brown's.
Yes, class. At the end of the show.
Yeah. Are they spontaneous, or do you...
I usually do them. I reflect on what we've done in the show and how it matters so much. Yeah. Because the show is centred around family, and the whole show is about family, and it's about a dysfunctional family, but I haven't met a family yet that's not dysfunctional.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's about kind of saying to them, look, you're not on your own. Our family are exactly the same, and there's lots of families like us. I mean, again, Joe, I'm the youngest of 11 kids. It's hard, you know, to grow up in a family of 11 kids without it being dysfunctional. You know, we used to kill each other. I had five sisters. I think most of the bras in our house had only one tip because they were fighting over bras and pulling them here and back. So, you know, we were dysfunctional. Yeah. But I tell you this now, we would die for each other. And that's the whole thing about family. Yeah. And if we can spread that to our neighbours, and we do most of the time, We can get this. We can get rid of this infection as quickly as it came, and it seemed to have come very quickly. It just seemed to have landed on us.
Yeah.
I don't know if COVID has a lot to answer for.
Yeah, we were saying that yesterday. We ever recover from lots of things that happened. That happened in COVID. Okay, you've 80 seconds to do. You know when you walk, you ramble back into the kitchen. You sit down. You cross your arms. You have your Boyer's cardigan on. You say, Boyer's is gone, by the way. You know that. Where do you get your cardigans?
I know. Yeah.
Guineys at Talbot Street.
We have to make them now.
Oh, do you have to knit them? Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, how's Winnie?
She's in great form.
Eilish
is getting treatment at the moment, and she's going through the hard bit, but she's doing extremely well. And again, tough as nails.
Yeah. But you sit down in the kitchen, and behind you, you have the Brennan's bread. Is that a real slice pan?
No, it's not.
It's best before date. It was about 8 years ago.
It's slices of Erebor.
Okay, and you've Barry's tea. And you've an Irish...
And the chocolate Mikado.
Yeah, the chocolate Kimberly. Yeah, well done. Okay,
do
your 90 seconds, not about me, but about goodness in the world and how we can all look after each other. Agnes.
There are times, you know, when you look at your family and you think, where did he come from? And then you go, you know what, I married him. And I married him to have a family. I didn't know I was going to have the family that I have. I didn't know I was going to be visiting one of them in a school that was recommended by a judge. I didn't know that, you know, my daughter would never be able to hold on to a man. I didn't know any of that. But as my mother used to say, she used to recite this poem to me, and she used to say, "The boy stood on the burning deck. His feet were full of blisters. His chest was pumped out, but you should have seen his sisters." I never knew what she feckin' meant by that, you know.
Brendan O'Carroll, I love you.
Joe, thanks for everything.
Many years. God bless you and Jenny, Jenny and all
give
your family.
To June.
Yeah, absolutely. Mind yourself.
Cheers.
Mind yourself.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Tina Johnson, it happened last Saturday.
That's right. Well, it wasn't the early hours. It was about 2 o'clock. I set out for my hike with two other friends. So it was like early Saturday morning.
And where were we?
So we were in the valley of Carn Tuathail, County Kerry.
Okay.
And I heard a cry for help.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably heard it about three times till I realised we need to stop or walk and listen carefully, because sometimes you can hear sheep and goats in the distance and you think it might be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But then we stopped. I was with two other friends, Natalia and Ruslan, and we stopped in our steps and we listened carefully.
Right.
And could hear a definite cry for help.
Wow.
Help.
Because sometimes the sounds of animals early in the morning can be deceptive as well, can't they? But you knew it was a human voice.
Yes, after the third call, I said, no, this is what we're dealing with.
Wow.
We need to listen and tune in carefully. And we made contact with the person, with the male up in the mountain, to the side of us somewhere, but we couldn't see, it was pitch dark. We had our torches. And he was kind of directing us, saying, "You're 11 o'clock position," to me. And then or to him, he was trying to guide me to him. He'd no torch. I could see nothing, only hear his voice. Mm. And he said he definitely needed help. I said, "You need help. I would be very cautious about ringing 999.
Yeah, okay.
Something I would think carefully about at that hour of the morning.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew then we had to take this quite seriously. It was somebody who was in difficulty and was on their own and was scared. You could hear it in the voice.
And tell us about the person.
Well, he was a male. He was on his own, and he had, as I said, his phone, his battery went, and he was out in the hills. We'll say nearly 24 hours at that stage.
Yeah.
And he was
So it was, yeah, it was, so it was pitch black, was it?
Yes, it was. It was, it was going to be hopefully bright by 4 a.m. So we were in the valley. We were in the valley. That's quite an easy walk in because it's completely, there's a track.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I hadn't made my mind up yet at that stage whether we would go up to the top. We were going to make that decision, but that was going to happen after the rescue, but we didn't do it.
And you, the reason, just to explain to people why you would set off, is that you'd be up on the top of Carrantool for sunrise. For the, and there's, it's, for a, it's one of the wonders, the wonders of the world, to be up there for sunrise. Anyway, you heard the voice. It's pitch black. And so you got to him. Had he, what was he wearing, or what condition was he in?
Well, I couldn't get to him till it got bright at 4 a.m. About that, maybe it was a bit after that. He had a T-shirt and he had shorts and a pea cap and his sunglasses, because it was a very hot, warm day down in Kerry anyway that Friday. So the first thing, he was sitting down, he was afraid to move because he had injured his knee. Well, he had a previous injury, so the injury was just a bit... we'll say he had made it worse, I suppose, by climbing that day. So it was a bit, it was painful, and he was a bit unsure of himself walking. So he was scared. He said he thought he was going to die during the night, and he was absolutely exhausted and thirsty, very thirsty. So I suspected he was becoming dehydrated, and he was becoming very shivery. Luckily, I had a foil blanket with me at my first aid kit.
Well done, well done.
And I was able to cover him, and I was able to give him Diorolite and chocolate, and my friend Natalia had sandwich for him. So.
And do you know how long he had been there, Tina?
I'd say, well, he got to the Devil's Ladder around 6 o'clock, then he went to the summit around 9 o'clock, and then it would have started to get dark around 10, I suppose.
Yeah.
So he got lost on the way back down. He took a route... which is, I mean, it's one of the routes, the zigzag way, but obviously he got lost coming off that. It probably got dark and he lost his way. Luckily, he came to this side of the valley. If it had been the other side, it could have been a different story because it's a bit of a sheer fall. So, to best of my knowledge, anyway, and he was stuck where he was. He was afraid to move, that he would injure himself more. And he had slipped a good bit on the grass somewhere up along. And I'd say he got a big fright from that.
So he was there, what, 7, 8 hours?
I'd say he was there I'd say he was there from about 9 o'clock till 3:30. But he had no food in him since the day, since leaving, because he had no food on him. He only had a bottle of water, but that was empty.
The coldest, so he ran out of... The coldest part of the 24-hour cycle from midnight to, good God.
Yeah, he was... Definitely, yeah, he was definitely going into hypothermia. Maybe, well, maybe not completely, but he was definitely getting very, very cold, shivery in that. He was delighted to see us, and he was very grateful. And when I rang Coast Guard at 999, they were absolutely fantastic. They took my word for it, and they were very supportive. And they got through to the Gardaí. The Gardaí were excellent as well. They made sure my call was genuine, and then they put me through to Mountain Rescue, who were amazing.
They're all, back to what Brendan O'Carroll was saying, the Mountain Rescue are part of what we are. They are volunteers, they're highly professional, they fundraise, they have to fundraise. So they and what was the man you rescued, what was he saying? And was he saying much?
No, he wasn't saying much. He just wanted to get down off the mountain and get to bed, really. He was totally exhausted and dehydrated, I would think.
Yeah.
But I had Diorolite on me, gave that to him, so that gave him, and he drank all our water that we had.
And
so he was very thirsty.
Chocolate to give him a bit of sugar.
Had chocolate. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's brilliant, Tina. You were carrying a blanket, a foil blanket for hypothermia. It's advised.
I knew I needed to be prepared myself. Your listeners might be saying, well, what was she doing out of that hour? Well, I'll tell you this. I thought about it myself many times. I said, am I okay to do this? And I went through my checklist and I made sure of my first aid kit. I was very cautious in my steps. I said, if we get so far, we're grand. But if we can't, then, you know, if it gets too dark and if I'm unsure, we'll turn back. Mm-hmm. So I was I had all my homework done. But something was definitely calling me to the Cairn Toohill that morning.
Yeah.
I had a feeling there was something drawing me to Cairn Toohill.
Okay.
So maybe it was the rescue that was meant to be.
Yeah. So to take us then through the time sequence, the arrival of the first responders and then getting down off the mountain.
Yeah, well, I rang them at 3:30 approximately from Natalia's phone. And it was about 3:30 and then Coast Guard were in contact straight away. Guard within 15 minutes, 10 minutes, I was in contact with the guards and mountain rescue. I'd say it was another, 2 minutes, three minutes after that. Everything was very quick. So it was by 3:45, 3:40, they knew help was needed at Cairn Toohill. So mountain rescue came out to, were in contact with me straight away. Now, I can't put an exact time on that.
Okay, yeah.
But they were in contact straight away. And at one stage, I got a bit, I felt, okay, maybe this isn't, maybe I'm being overcautious.
No, you're not.
I wasn't sure. So I rang mountain rescue back and ran it over them. I said, look, I'm not sure. Maybe he's not that injured and maybe he can make it down when he's bright. But he definitely needs the support to come down off the mountain. And I got the correct advice from Mountain Rescue. I won't name the names.
Yeah.
For confidentiality and all that. So basically, the two gentlemen were extremely good and helpful and supportive. And they said, no, it's genuine. You can't bring him down yourself. Yeah. And actually, just, be careful yourself. They were their words. And when it gets bright, you probably will be able to locate him, but don't go up to him. But in the end, he was very close. I was able to reach him. Not very close, but I was able to reach I got to him. And he was starting to move himself and start to slide down. And I said, no, you need to stay. So I went up to him and I was able to talk to him and assess the situation, see what we're dealing with and help. Being a nurse, it helps as well.
Yeah.
So I had that. I went into nurse mode, I suppose, yeah.
And what time did he eventually get down off the mountain?
It was after 5 because sunrise came.
Yeah.
What
injuries did he, if he might have just got his leg up, but did he have any fractures or injuries?
No, he didn't, thankfully. Okay. No, he didn't. And I know there'd be a lot worse scenarios up Cairn Toohill. I know it wasn't...
How was anyone to know?
Yeah, it ended fantastic. Well. But he could have slipped if I wasn't there. He might have... Because I had to talk to him for at least a half an hour in the dark to steady him and say, look, help is on the way. Stay where you are.
Good man.
Yeah.
Well done. And Tina, what do you carry in your bag when you're going? Because everyone should do it, really.
Okay. So I had brought chocolate, foil blanket, triangular bandage in case there's any injuries.
Yeah.
I joked with Mountain Rescue afterwards. I said the only thing I forgot was the safety pin for that. But I had water, plenty of water, diuretic, chocolate, protein balls, sandwiches, I think that's all I had. All pain medications. I had pain relief.
It's brilliant, but it's fairly straightforward stuff if we're all going off for even a ramble, but we are going up any incline or anywhere that can be inhospitable be times, whether it be the weather or whatever. All these things are easily packed, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. It did take me 3 hours to organise myself the evening before. Mm-hmm. And so once I got the bag packed, I was pretty feeling fairly satisfied that I had everything. Yeah. Also, our local library, I only just picked them up the day before, with Kerry's Sports Partnership, have walking poles. So they're free. So I rang them and I had them. And they were a huge asset to them coming down. Yeah.
It's fantastic.
They're walking poles. Yeah, they're... They're excellent. So they were a fantastic asset to have as well.
Another reminder, let me get it in. I know I'm boring on this. Another reminder, if you're not a member of your local library, join. Everyone in this yes. country, even if you get a supply of books in your hall door every day from an elderly maiden aunt who has lots of money, still please join your local library. I love it. We all should be in our local to support it. So they can say, if they ever come under threat, listen, we have 2 million subscribers, 2 million members, and they are a fantastic resource. Oh, they're just brilliant. And now you're telling me the local library in Kerry, actually lends out these walking sticks. Isn't that brilliant?
Yes.
Isn't that brilliant?
And there is a booklet that goes with it that shows you how to use them. Because you have to have the correct, you have to put them to the correct, you know, your height. So you go by the instructions.
Yeah. So, well done.
Absolutely invaluable. They were invaluable. I had the torches, we had our layers, we had enough supplies and plenty of food, everything, yeah.
Okay, so. And there I'm seeing the photograph of you in the Kerryman, another great, great provincial paper going a long, long time. So, Tina, well done, and I hope that man is okay.
Thank you.
And there's lessons for all of us in this. There's all of them.
Thank you.
So what was the tell me about the sunrise.
Oh, that was amazing.
Okay.
That was, but not only did we have a sunrise, we had a moonrise and a shooting star.
Ah, for God's sake.
So it went, and a beautiful hare at the time of the rescue, a hare went running across us. So the countryside is beautiful, it's magical in the valley, but you do have to be prepared and know where you're going. Yeah.
Well told and gently told,
thank
Tina,
you.
As well. Thank you so much. That's Tina Johnson. Joe at RTE.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Clodagh, good afternoon. Another piece of advice for those, very simple piece of advice, for those who are going walking or rambling or indeed mountain climbing. Clodagh, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe. Good to talk to you.
Likewise.
How are you?
Oh, good, yeah. Tell us about...
And the best of luck for tomorrow. Thinking of you.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was listening to the Clan Tool Rescue, it just struck me when the girl was talking. I'm a hill walker myself, as is my husband, in the club for the last 17 years. A small little item that everybody in the club carries, and it's a whistle.
Okay. A whistle?
A whistle, yeah. And the reason for the whistle is, obviously, that if you get into trouble, people will hear a whistle a lot quicker than they'll find to decipher whether it's an animal whatever. So you can pick them up for 2 or 3 euro in any of the walking shops. Or also, I was saying to a researcher that in a particular backpack, I presume I can mention the name of it, the brand is called Osprey. It may be another backpack.
Yeah, yeah.
But a lot of people don't know that actually on the chest strap of that Osprey bag, there's a built-in whistle.
Ah.
A lot of when I've told people, they've gone, "Oh my God," you know. And the other thing that struck me was a rule of thumb with all of us that are walking. No matter where we're walking, we always let somebody know before we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that if we don't get back at a particular time, that at least, I don't know how that man was out all night and, you know, possibly hadn't said to anybody, you know, that he was going.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just an added sort of insurance that if you don't get back when you're expected to, that, you know, somebody will begin to, you know, raise questions or the alarm or whatever, you know. And obviously Mountain Rescue are front and centre of our club and every club in the country. And I encourage anybody that always looking for funds too. We try and support them as a club. We do fundraisers, etc. But they're just absolutely priceless.
And you can get a plastic whistle.
Plastic is actually better because with our climate. You know, other whistles can get rusty or whatever. Yeah, I have a bright orange little plastic whistle. That's what I have. I do have an Osprey bag as well, but I've had this whistle. I have to check every so often, but it still works.
And tell us about you've donated. Do you mean your little rambling club, or you've donated 2,000 euro to Mourn? Rescue.
We give them a donation every year, and at the moment they're trying to build something bigger. So this year our donation wouldn't be as much as that. It's a significant donation, but we try and raise between us during the year because They need all the funds they can get. Every mountain rescue group do, you know. But that's our charity in inverted commas in the club itself.
By the way, when you're out walking and climbing and rambling, do you see people in odd gear? Like, are most people prepared for the weather changing colder?
I'd say most people are, but every time you go out, you see people that are wrongly dressed, you know, from runners to shorts to no backpack to no water to, you know, just people don't think before they go out. And sometimes, certainly in our own club, even when we're walking casually as a group, that we won't be out on a club Sunday, there are people in the club that would challenge these other people to, you know, to test, and they go back down. A lot of the time, people aren't receptive to that. I think they think that, you know, invincible inverted commas. But we constantly see people, see people that just don't. I mean, even to that girl talking the 3 hours packing her bag. Now, it doesn't, you know, you don't have to go to that extreme, things like, as she said, layers, like there's just fundamentals, water, you know, an extra layer, you know, a waterproof jacket. They're small, they're like, it's a small bundle, but it's absolutely imperative.
Yeah, here.
Particularly in this country, you know.
Well said, Clodagh, and support your local mountain rescue.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Clodagh. Okay, kind regards. Likewise. To New Zealand now, prompted by Brendan O'Carroll. Cathy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, Joe. It's such an honour to talk to you.
Listening to Brendan.
I was just loving to hear the two of you chatting, and it just really reminded me about how during COVID lockdowns, your show and you were my lifeline, because I would talk. My dad was in Dublin, and he would listen every day to your show, and I would listen here, and then we would discuss the topics, you know, that you discussed, and on the show, and it just kept us connected and made the world seem much smaller, and brought me home and made me feel like I was only down the road. So it was just fantastic, you know. So I'm very grateful to you.
But what time is it in New Zealand now?
Yeah, well, it's 1:20. Is it 1:36 a.m.? I don't know what I'm doing now, but anyway, listen. I listen to every show.
I've had letters from the States this week and as far flung as Thailand and Vietnam. The States, they listen at 9 o'clock, around 9 o'clock in the morning, depending on what time zone you're in. So it can help. And so when Liveline was on, and the great thing about the people, the listeners of Liveline, is that they're from all different parts of the country. Everyone, as I said before, doesn't have one story. Everyone has 100 stories or different opinions. But people can, as you say, yourself and your dad in two different parts of the world in the middle of lockdown could have a chat about let Mary go on too long, or wasn't Paddy well able to get the better of Joe when he got cranky at that. That's appreciated. It really made a huge difference.
He finished every phone call with me with "wash your hands," like you're what you used to say.
51551, wash your hands.
He'd bring me back. Exactly.
51551. And by the way, tell me about your dad now, Aidan.
You know, he's passed away. He passed away during COVID, so it made it all the more special, because I think for about a year and a half we just chatted every single night, and he was well known, quite well known around Dublin. He worked at the Burlington for a long time, and Annabelle's nightclub and all those.
Aidan, because your name is Doyle.
That's Aidan. That's right.
Tall,
yes.
Handsome.
Yes.
Great stature.
Oh, yes, he would love that.
That was your dad. God rest him.
Yes. Yeah, and he'd be delighted that his name getting the mention on the radio today. And
people
were
so fond of him. Always a warm welcome for everybody going through the doors.
That's
and
so nice to hear.
Even the hotel is gone now. It's gone.
I know. Listening to you and Brendan just brought it all back.
Oh, that's good. Cathy, how long are you in New Zealand?
Oh, yeah. Over since the 90s. I've lost track now, but yes. Yeah. But so, I used to always go home, you know, until COVID hit. So, So.
You're well settled.
Exactly. Now that you have time, you might have time to make these kind of trips.
Well, I was looking up New Zealand for some other reason recently, and the population of the Republic of Ireland and the population of New Zealand is within 100,000 of each other. That's how close we are in population. Where it's one of the, and people often say things that start in Ireland or trends or whatever, that New Zealand is our closest country in the world in terms of population. Just another piece of useless information, and I've two.
No, it's very interesting information. Yeah.
I have two and great friends out there.
Eamon
O'Brien, who's a maths prof. Originally from Galway, and his partner Alistair, they're out there, and we see them every time they're home, and they love it out there.
There's a big Irish community.
Great. Okay, so is Cathy? If pronounce just MacFadzean.
Yeah, I know it's a tricky one. How the heck I ended up with that? I don't know.
And are you one of the MacFadzeans from Killorgan or the MacFadzeans from Kenmare?
Neither have I.
Kathy, lovely.
Something to the list.
Lovely to hear from you, and God rest Aidan Doyle. Many people now would be interested in, and we'll say a little prayer for Aidan and his hospitality. His generosity,
really,
which came to everyone free of charge, regardless of who walked through the doors of the hotel. He's a lovely man. I didn't know the connection.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cathy. You mind yourself.
No.
Good health.
You mind yourself.
Will you go asleep?
And all the best to you.
Yeah, will you go asleep?
I know.
It's 20 to 2 in the morning. Good night.
How will I ever sleep now?
Good night. God bless. God bless.
Thank you, Cathy, before you go,
wash your hands.
0818 715 815.
Kieran, come in. Kieran Kilbride in Dublin 14. Tell your story while you're there.
Joe, a big fan of yours, of course, but in the 1600s when you were with Gay on the radio, there were postage competitions. You sent in your postcard.
God be with the
days when we sent a postcard. And there was a competition. I was in the bathroom business, so you sent for somebody that was supposed to know what they were talking about, and they ended up with me. I don't know how you ended up with me, but we worked for a company. I still work in the bathroom business, called Armitage Shanks.
Of course,
and you wanted to know, and the competition that you and Gay thought up was, what do you use a bidet for?
Okay.
People were beginning to travel in the 80s.
Yes,
and this was the big question of the day. Some of the answers, Joe, were gas. You know, they were just so funny, you know. So the question went out, what do you use your bidet for? Oh, I use it to wash me socks in, Gay, you know. Or the next one was, well, we actually wash the vegetables in the bidet, you know.
Oh, mother of God.
And all sorts of things were coming in. And, of course, the dog always got washed in the bidet, you know.
The bidet,
so it was a very funny competition at the times, and I remember it well, you know.
Yeah,
it was very, very funny.
But
you probably don't, but
Kieran,
sure, remember some of those.
Well, Kieran, you remember that you mentioned postcards, okay? And again, this is the world we now live in. So few people unfortunately, send letters or postcards. The Gayborn show back in the day had a bigger mailbag every day than the Queen of England. I discovered this through nonsensical. But we made one mistake. Well, I'm blaming Gay. We made one mistake one day, okay? And we had this brilliant chef on. He's moved on since. He was an army chef. He was an incredible communicator. And, of course, with Gay, the two of them, and he started giving out recipes left, right and centre, okay? So Gay said, if you want a copy... People ringing in. If you want a copy of the recipes from today's programme, send us a stamped address envelope. Okay? And we will put it in. For the next 4 days, I cannot tell you, thousands, hundreds of mailbags. And then I had the simple idea. One, I was very conscious that the stamps were going to be unused. But I rang James Dunn, who was in The Star. I rang, I don't know who was in, Vinnie Doyle or whoever, with all these legends who were in the Indo. I'm trying to remember.
Great
legend. And someone in the Examiner. And I said, if Gay says tomorrow, if you buy the Indo, the Star or the Examiner, we try to cover everybody tomorrow, you can get the recipes free. You would print the recipes. What we're offering, the Indo, the Star, the Examiner, is a free ad, so to speak, for the coverage.
Yes.
And the three of them agreed to it immediately. So we could say, now, we were left with about 100 bags, mail bags, of stamped address envelopes. Obviously, we couldn't post them back. What was the point? So we gave them, I think we gave them to the missions. They used to collect stamps from one of the missions. But that was
how big
the post and postcards were back in the day. Stay with us, Kieran. Kieran, David, good afternoon.
I remember. Joe was...
Are you there, David? Come in to me. David, you're in a bathroom. You're in a bidet, are you? I can't hear you.
I'm in a garage.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like to be idle too long. Just wish you all the very best.
Okay.
And thank you for all the years. And in conjunction with your true story about being mistaken for Joe Duffy, the BMW I had one about long ago, the Australian violinist Fritz Kreisler was in a restaurant in America.
Okay.
And somebody came up to him gushingly and said, "Oh, Mr. Kreisler, we love your cars." And he just took it on the chin and thanked them. You know,
well, can I tell you? Well, now you prompted me with another true story, because I was there when it happened. It was the Special Olympics. It was on in the Billy Morton Stadium up in Santry. So it would have been maybe 20 years ago. And the main sponsor of the Special Olympics when it started, he probably still is, known as philanthropy, was Dennis O'Brien. Okay, and we were all up. Dennis, I was giving out medals. He was giving out medals. Everyone was participating and having a bit of fun. And then all the participants, who were brilliant, absolutely, but they were all brought into one of the rooms, big room, and laid out on all the tables was obviously their Fanta or Club Orange or whatever, or the My Waddy. But they all got an O'Brien sandwich. Do you follow me?
Which is
the still going O'Brien's sandwiches, and two of the young kids went over. Someone was it Mary? Yeah, Mary Davis, who was the still is so heavily involved. Mary Davis said, "Now I just want to introduce. This is Dennis O'Brien. This is Joe Duffy. This is okay, whatever." And when she finished, two of the kids went up to Dennis O'Brien. I said, "Mr. O'Brien, thank you very much for the sandwiches." They thought Dennis O'Brien had made all the sandwiches. Small world, and don't lose. The motto is, we never lose a run of ourselves in this country. Never. Joe@rte.ie. Thanks, guys.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Brian Seaford is in County Down. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You have a few words, I'm told. I'm not being given any information here today, rightly so, I suspect. Go ahead, Brian.
Joe, I first came across you about 11 years ago when my wife had cancer.
Okay.
And she's fine now. She's at work. She's
brilliant.
Happy. She's
brilliant.
Hopefully not listening to the radio. But, Joe, the only thing I could do about home was to fix a ditch.
Okay. Okay.
I couldn't sit in the house. What can you do? You can say, "Are you okay?" You can get her a drink of water. She's sick looking at me. I went out and I decided I'm going to fix the ditch.
Good man.
And I went to the top of the lane, and I'm looking straight about 7 miles from the Mourne Mountains. And the only station I could get on my little sports radio was RTE Radio 1. And this man waffling about a deer strategy.
This was me.
Ireland, yeah. And some other guy was talking about the amount of deer in Wicklow, amount of deer in Monaghan and Donegal. And I thought to myself, I have to get a better reception here, because it was stop and start. I went down to the house, I ran down to the house, and I got a coat hanger. And I rigged up a better aerial to hang on the gate.
Yes. Okay, well done. Well done. And did you get the stone ditch repaired?
I did, Joe. Yeah. I did.
And
I worked at it for 20.
And you're still living in the same spot?
I'm still living in the same house as 30 years.
And what's the view from your window?
Sleep Donard.
Oh, beautiful.
Commoda.
Oh.
Berna. Millmore.
Yeah.
And not a house, not a house in between.
And what's your nearest, village or town?
Nearest village, I'm Seaford Village. Seaford Village, very historic little place.
Okay.
And then Clough, Dundrum, Newcastle, County Down.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Ballinahinch, carried up Belfast the other way.
Beautiful part of the world.
Yeah, well, funny, you had a guy on a couple of weeks ago and he was talking about this camper van.
Yeah.
And he said one of the best places he ever travels to is Tullymore.
Which is up there, isn't it?
It's Newcastle. That's Newcastle. You have Newcastle Forest Park at the bottom of Mourns.
Yeah. I visited the last time I was up there was interviewing families for the book myself and Freya McClemens did, The Children of the Troubled. And there was all the murders were savage, but there was one particular murder, one family, gorgeous family I met, and I'll never forget them as long as I live. They lived near Newcastle, and I just remember looking out the beauty of the location, and then the tragedy of what had befallen their beautiful boy, who had been killed, murdered, mutilated, unfortunately, for one reason and one reason only. In that awful world that was there, he was killed because he was a Catholic. And you know, it happened left, right and centre, unfortunately. But that's my memory. I've drove around Northern Ireland for that year an awful lot. I used to do it when I was president of USI. But more than anything else, that's seared into my heart, talking to those families, Brian. That we're so glad all of that is behind us. We really are. We really are. Okay, Brian, good to meet you, Margaret. Kind regards to your wife. And you're still available for repairing stone ditches and various walls and pillars.
I can look at them and gauge you, but I'll not be doing it.
Okay. Mind yourself,
thanks,
Brian.
Too.
Good to meet you, Margaret. Is Vivienne? Vivienne is in Ashbourne, in Dublin. Just outside Dublin. Ashbourne in County Meath, really, isn't it?
That's right.
Vivienne, how are you?
But now I'm from Finglas.
Ah, yeah. Oh, no,
I live,
Brendan O'Carroll. Fingers. Yeah. Okay.
Brendan O'Carroll sat in my home.
Oh, mother of God.
I wasn't quick enough to get the phone to him.
You weren't quick enough to ring the guards. And did the guards get him
I
out?
I wasn't.
Quickly enough,
unfortunately,
yeah.
Unfortunately, no. But he used to... I was going back to when he started, Joe.
Yeah.
The Jolly Beggarman, he'd remember that. That's where we used to go and see him every week. And I knew him because, like that, I was in Finglas. I'm still there, but I'm so ill. I'm with my daughter.
Okay.
But what I'm ringing Joe is, I'm crying because you have me broken heart.
Stop.
The fact that you're gone. You're a bloody legend. Excuse that bloody now on the phone. Mm. You are one of the legends. I'm years ringing you.
Okay.
And you've listened to everybody in this country. You've given us a voice that we didn't have, and you've allowed us to speak. And I don't know how long it is I'm ringing you. You've sent me some beautiful your painting. I was thinking maybe you can go to Sandy Mount, Balls Bridge, and do your cards, your lovely paintings, your drawings, your paintings. But Joe, what are we gonna do?
Yeah, but the live line.
No, I'm not wishing you the best of luck.
I know.
The best of luck. I'm feeling sorry for myself.
Okay, live
but
line.
I'm also feeling sorry for everybody that depend and listen to you every day.
Yeah.
You do.
Okay.
You don't realise, Joe, what
I appreciate it. I really do appreciate it.
For the people. But
well,
invariably,
Vivienne, it's the other listeners have done for each other. You know, it's these acts of kindness or help or encouragement or information. It's sharing.
Joe, loving, sharing. I love everybody.
Yeah,
and if everybody in this world loved everybody and gave, as you said, you're sharing, you're caring.
Yeah.
You've given us a voice that we didn't have. We won't have. We don't have that anywhere.
Okay.
You gave us that.
Yeah, I understand that. And
Joe, you're you you are do you know what? You're unbelievable.
Okay.
And you are going to be very... And I know, as I said, I know your family are going to say, get her off there because we want them home. And of course they do, but we want you too.
Yeah, okay.
And you're absolutely brilliant.
And you're absolutely brilliant. And you
I'm not brilliant. You are so good.
That's made this program what it is, and it will continue.
But you see, if we hadn't got you there, Joe, we couldn't do it.
Okay. You're very good, Vivian.
You give us our
love you, honey. Big hug.
And love you, and a huge hug to you. May you have a lovely, lovely life.
Yeah. Please, God.
You're a legend. You're going down in history like the rest of us. You're a legend.
Thanks, Vivian.
You are a legend.
Thanks.
You are.
You're gorgeous.
Mind yourself, I love you. God bless you.
You too. You too, honey. Maureen Lynch is in Mohill. Maureen.
Joe, I just ring in to wish you the best.
Thanks very much. Okay.
Yeah. I was on to you. Remember about the Mohill lottery?
Oh, I do.
When I was going to Knock. Well, it's going great still.
Great.
Yeah, it's going great. I'm Catherine's mother. You like Catherine Lynch?
Of course I love Catherine. I remember when you rang in that day. Remember the old gag? Because I do, because I use them all the time. The old gag. I said, now, Maureen, it's about the Mohill GAA lotto. Is it such a big issue? Are you sure you're not making a mountain out of a molehill?
That was it.
Sinead, stay there. Just Sinead Bourne. Sinead is in New Delhi.
I am, Joe.
And New Delhi, it's not the Indian restaurant in Clare Street. You're in India.
New Delhi in India. I am. And I just want to say you're a national institution. I'm 48 and I've gone through the whole menopause thing and HRT. And I want to thank you especially for bringing that to the airways.
Okay.
I'm out here in New Delhi and, I see a gynecologist out here and HRT is not an issue for women out here.
Great.
So we're so privileged and you brought that to the airways. And
the women, I just wanted to thank you as well
for your work that you did about the children in the 1916 Rising.
Yeah, very proud of that, yeah. And that prompts me, because I want to finish on this name, if you'll indulge me, Sinead, and Maureen, and the base of what Brian was saying. The boy I was trying to remember, and the family I remembered when I was up around Brian's part of the country doing Children of the Troubles, his name was James Morgan. He was 16. And James, he was murdered, as I say, 3,000 people murdered, nearly 200 children. He was 16. And James Morgan, I met Philomena and Justin, his parents. He would have been 28 next month. God rest him. And that's where I want to finish.